This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Whether you consider it a relief check or a stimulus check or too little too late, the money is starting to show up. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Wednesday, December 30th. Thanks for joining us. Just in time for the new year and January rent, mortgage payments, and other bills due the first of the month, the Treasury Department has started sending out the new round of pandemic relief payments. The IRS says it started making direct deposits of $600 into some people's bank accounts yesterday. People who don't have a bank account on file with the IRS can look forward to getting either a paper check in the mail or a prepaid debit card. As Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, the cards have some advantages over the paper checks, but some drawbacks as well.
People who receive the prepaid debit cards are the most likely to not have bank accounts. Tyrone Ross is CEO of the investing platform OnRamp Invest. He says they're the people who are going to need to spend the money as quickly as possible.
It's not, okay, well, can I invest this or can I put it into... No, it's, I have needs that have to be met. It's consumption, and that's what they want.
Debit cards can also be cheaper than checks for people who don't have bank accounts. Cashing a check costs them money. But with a card, says Chantel Boyens with the Urban Institute,
there is a network of ATMs where if you have the card, you can access your funds without any fees.
But people can only make one withdrawal for free from an out-of-network ATM. After that, it costs $2. Boyan says lower-income people are more likely to pay those fees.
You know, they may be located in areas where they don't have as good of access to in-network ATMs.
The cards also come with terms of service. And Ira Reingold, executive director of the National Association of Consumer Advocates, says some of them put card users at a disadvantage.
You, consumer, if you have a complaint, you cannot go to court. You cannot be part of a collective action, a class action.
Members of Congress sent a letter to the Treasury this week asking it to remove those clauses and reduce any fees. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Lawmakers tucked a provision banning surprise medical bills into this latest relief package. Those are the unexpected charges from out-of-network healthcare providers that can add up to tens of thousands of dollars. One thing that's not yet clear is how this might affect insurance premiums. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
It's a nasty shock. Without realizing it, you were treated by a healthcare provider who was out of network. Surprise, you're stuck with a huge bill. Jen Taylor with the consumer advocacy group Families USA says some of the biggest unexpected medical bills come from air ambulances.
Where people were getting, you know, a $50,000 bill and they were unconscious and put into an air ambulance and had no say in the matter.
Once this surprise medical bill legislation goes into effect in 2022, out-of-network providers like air ambulances won't be able to send consumers unexpected bills. Instead, providers and insurers will have 30 days to negotiate how much the insurer will cover. If they can't agree, an independent arbitrator would step in.
Each party submits their best offer, and the arbitrator has to choose one or the other.
Spencer Perlman directs healthcare research at Veda Partners. He says using arbitration was a congressional compromise. Insurers had lobbied for benchmark rates, limiting charges. Some consumer advocates worry that insurers will raise premiums if they lose in arbitration. But Rice University health economist Vivian Ho thinks arbitration could actually save insurers money, and they could pass some of that savings along to consumers.
This will slow the growth in premiums. I'm not sure that we'll actually see a reduction in premiums.
The legislation also helps the uninsured, requiring the government to set up a process for resolving their billing disputes. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, markets were up. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Yesterday on the show, I talked with Megan Devine about grieving in the pandemic and how it's important to acknowledge loss and grief. It's also important to acknowledge growth. Now, many people, especially parents, probably have less free time this year than before. But some of us had some extra time on our hands. Something I started doing this year was playing piano. Just before the lockdown, my brother decided to downsize to move in with his boyfriend and split the cost of shipping our grandmother's piano from his house in my hometown of St. Louis to where I live now in D.C. It was in our house growing up, but I never learned to play, so this was a new thing for me. Lots of people tried something new this year, like our next guest.
2020 has been an incredibly confusing year for me. In March of this year, I got furloughed from my job. I work in the travel industry, and it took a turn for the worse pretty quickly. So after I lost my job, I was really looking for a way to fill my time, and I had seen a few people on Instagram and the internet making customized action figures. Collecting action figures was something I did as a kid, so I went to my parents' house, picked up all the ones I could from their basement, and brought them home, and I spent my days without a job, just looking up YouTube videos on how to sculpt, how to sand, how to paint. I started to share them on Instagram under the name Sir Collect-A-Lot. And then shortly, people started making requests, either to purchase those ones that I had made or to request new ones for me to make. And I had them literally stacking up all over my apartment, so I decided to go ahead and sell them.
That was Miles McAlpin in Cambridge, Massachusetts, making and selling custom action figures. You'll be hearing about how other folks have been finding ways to spend their time later on in the show. Freelancers, contractors, gig workers, we have a lot of different terms for people who may not bring in a consistent paycheck. In the UK, right now, many of them are being called the excluded. That's because while the British government provides financial support to both employees and businesses affected by the pandemic, that safety net excludes self-employed workers who normally pay themselves dividends rather than a monthly salary. BBC business correspondent Emma Simpson has been talking to some of these workers.
The British government is spending hundreds of billions of dollars on job support measures, but they're facing increasing pressure to do more to help the nearly 3 million workers who've fallen through the gaps and failed to meet the criteria for financial help.
This is the roasted turkey with chestnut stuffing.
Ian and Lindsay Beagle run a corporate catering business in Buckinghamshire, not far from Heathrow Airport. They were set to have their best ever year until the pandemic struck.
The rug was pulled from under our feet.
98% of our earnings have gone. Now it's sleepless nights.
Orders for their sandwich platters and gourmet boardroom dinners disappeared overnight, so they switched to providing meals for frontline medical staff. It saved the business, but are now struggling to survive into 2021.
I feel like we've been left out completely. I know a lot of self-employed workers that have not really needed the money, but obviously have been offered it by the government and accepted it.
It doesn't make sense why we kept our staff on if the business goes under, because why support businesses by giving staff furlough, keeping them employed, only for them to lose their job because the business wasn't supported in the first place?
Ian is a limited company director, so he and Lindsay take most of their income in dividends, which the government will not cover. There are around 700,000 small businesses in a similar position across the UK. Some have already gone out of business, their owners losing everything they've worked for.
At the beginning of the crisis, it was really about protecting incomes as quickly as possible and getting money to those who needed it.
Hannah Sinclair is from the Resolution Foundation, a British think tank focused on improving living standards for those on low to middle incomes.
But now we're entering the third round of support, and there's been more and more evidence building up on the groups that are missing out from that support. It's clear that there are hundreds of thousands of workers who are still unable to work but are unable to access government grants. And now that the government is extending support, they should be thinking about how better to target support to those who really need it.
Louise Burton is 28 and a sound editor. Like many in the film and TV industry, she's self-employed. She worked on the blockbuster movie Bohemian Rhapsody on a contract, which ruled her out for the main self-employment job support scheme.
I pay tax. Why shouldn't I be eligible for any kind of support? It makes me furious. My mental health has been suffering because of this crisis. I know self-employment is hard and I know the industry is hard, but you never expect to be left out quite like this.
54% of self-employed workers who have stopped working during the crisis have seen their income drop by more than a quarter. This compares with just 14% of employees who've been on furlough, a temporary paid leave of absence. Other freelance workers who haven't been able to show a regular income over the past 3 years have also had no specific government support. Research shows the earnings hit is akin to losing your job. And to the so-called excluded, the emotional and mental distress they've gone through this year can't be quantified. In London, I'm the BBC's Emma Simpson for Marketplace.
Here in the US, we're also in a very different labour market than when the pandemic started. Millions have lost jobs, been furloughed, had their hours cut. Some have just left the workforce entirely. We want to hear your story. Send us a note about your economic journey through the pandemic at marketplace.org. Some of us picked up new hobbies this year as a way of managing stress. One of our producers, Ali Pham, bought a hand loom and has been learning how to weave wall hangings and bags. She says it's pretty calming. For some people, it was exercise, gardening, cooking. Here's Manisha Cyrus from St. Paul, Minnesota.
2020 for me has been experimental. It's helped me think of new things to do, whether it's in the kitchen or just in my emotional or mental stability. It's really helped me try to become better with just being by myself. One way that I've been trying just to like have better mental health overall is to start journaling and just writing things down. Sometimes you don't always feel comfortable talking to someone, or maybe they're not there when you feel that feeling, and then you're like, well, I feel like somebody should know. But I know a lot of people just say even a sentence a day will help. So that's why I want to try doing better, because I want to see that progress that people are talking about.
That's Manisha Cyrus in St. Paul, Minnesota. Coming up,
I ended up retiring as planned in the middle of March.
Right when the very unplanned pandemic hit. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average advanced 73 points, 0.2%, to close at 30,409. The Nasdaq picked up 19 points, 0.1%, to finish at 12,870. And the S&P 500 found 5 points, also 0.1%, to end at 3732. AstraZeneca rose 0.5%. Britain became the first country to approve the drug maker's COVID-19 vaccine. At $3 to $4 a dose, this vaccine is significantly cheaper than the others and only needs a normal refrigerator for storage. Checking on the other vaccine makers, Moderna lost 2.8%, Pfizer shaved off 0.8%. Bonds rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 0.92%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Since the start of the pandemic, many people have been looking for more activities to do at home. And given the numbers, reading more books has been one of those things. Print sales are up almost 8% this year, according to industry research from NPD BookScan. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports on just who's benefiting from that increase.
In a normal year, book people in downtown Austin would host 300 or more in-person events. That's readings, signings, book clubs. This year, 67.
Translating those into sales is a challenge.
That's Book People's general manager, Charlie Rasek. She says they've had a website for years, but when the stay-at-home order hit Austin in March, they weren't prepared.
We had to do a really hard pivot to put some infrastructure in place to be able to support driving 100% of our sales to our website.
And she says Austinites are looking for a way to buy books locally. Nationally, Kristen McLean at the NPD Book Group says there have been a few specific market segments that outperformed in 2020, from March to May when schools began to close.
Children's categories, especially around education and activity, jumped by over 200%.
And then she says over the summer,
we had the rise of Black Lives Matter. So that drove a really interesting rise in adult nonfiction around racial justice, around history.
Ebooks and audiobook sales are up too, and Amazon, Walmart, and the like benefited the most from it all. But Allison Hill, CEO of the American Booksellers Association, is optimistic for indies.
During the pandemic, we saw 59 independent bookstores close, but at the same time, you know, we saw 35 independent bookstores open.
She thinks the pandemic actually helped some independent bookstores by growing their online presence to compete with Amazon. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
This holiday season has definitely not slowed down the economic news at all. Catch up with the latest every morning with my colleagues over at the Marketplace Morning Report. They squeeze a lot of news into 7.5 minutes every weekday morning.
Some people, mostly frontline medical workers, have started receiving COVID-19 vaccines. But the clinical trials for those vaccines are ongoing. In fact, they're still recruiting participants. And those running the trials are particularly focused on signing up people who tend not to be part of this sort of thing. Blake Farmer of WPLN in Nashville reports.
This international mall on the southeast side of Nashville would be seen as an unusual spot for recruiting clinical trial participants, at least before COVID-19. Now this strip mall, called Plaza Mariachi, with its arcade, food court, and souvenir shops, is fertile ground. Most people are watching the pitch from a clinical trial investigator translated into Spanish through Facebook Live. But Rolando Figueroa heard an ad for the event.
En la radio.
On the radio. So the 36-year-old plumber came to see in person. He says his family has so far been spared by COVID-19, but he'd like to get the vaccine sooner rather than later.
If one of my family members gets sick, I want to see if we can figure out how to get the vaccine.
Figueroa has the background pharmaceutical companies could use more of. He's originally from Mexico. Latinx patients are underrepresented in typical clinical trials, and yet they're disproportionately affected by this pandemic, with higher rates of infection and mortality compared to other Americans. While Figueroa doesn't need much convincing, Susana Vasquez, who is also listening, says recruiters have many doubts to overcome. Her family is also originally from Mexico, and she says people in her community were skeptical of even getting tested.
Because they thought that they would have to give their personal information, immigration status, or whatever would be needed. So I think that would also play a role in being part of the clinical study.
It's an even bigger leap, she says, to agree to be followed for years, even if it's not directly by the government. The manufacturers farthest along with their COVID-19 vaccine trials have had more success than usual signing up patients from diverse backgrounds. But the initial priority was speed. Now, diversity is the top focus, says Dr. Stephen Sharp, who leads a vaccine trial site in Nashville. He recently held a Facebook event with Kurdish young professionals.
We want folks from all different ethnic backgrounds because it's possible that the vaccine works better in one group or lesser in another group, and the only way you find that out is to test it.
Sharp will be recruiting new patients for at least the next few months, since the trials will continue for years to see how long the vaccines are effective. Signing up diverse patients can be especially slow, since the researchers themselves tend not to be diverse. Jim Kremitas heads the Association of Clinical Research Professionals.
We've known this problem for years and years, and the way that the industry's tried to approach it, and there's nothing wrong with this, but it's to teach cultural sensitivity to investigators.
But far more effective for recruitment, Kremita says, is when the researchers share the same cultural background as their participants. So this year, as clinical research firms have had to staff up, Kremita says they've been intentional about making diversity more of a priority in their hiring.
And we believe that that'll make it easier to build trust and to have effective communication between the investigators or the researchers at the site and potential patient populations to volunteer for studies.
Institutions that already had deep connections with underrepresented communities, like historically black medical schools, have been a step ahead in recruiting more diverse trial participants.
You can't just like show up and expect people to kind of get on board.
Professor Rachel Hardiman researches health equity at the University of Minnesota.
It does take, very intentional effort and time to engage people in a way that feels good and feels trustworthy.
And building trust is important for groups that have historically faced disparities in treatment or have been the subject of unethical medical research in the past. Public health advocates hope the outreach will encourage people to take the vaccine when it becomes available to them. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
Until more of us can get the vaccine, health officials are asking, begging people to just stay home if you can. So back to the new hobbies some people have picked up this year. I wasn't the only one who turned to music.
2020 for me was, I think, a series of extremes. I started to think that hobbies really were a way for me to help keep my sanity. Throughout this time, music has been my mainstay. I ended up retiring as planned in the middle of March. So with that, I became more active in the community. This is a brand new community, Village Hearth, being, you know, an LGBTQ 55 plus friends and allies retirement community. A couple of months ago, I DJed a dance party for all the retirees. and I had some huge speakers that I lugged out in a cart and my laptop where I stream all my music from. And masked, we were outdoors and people were rocking to the beat.
That was Dr. Barbara Chase in Durham, North Carolina. This final note on the way out, all the people picking up new musical skills has helped out some businesses selling instruments. A story on payments.com quotes CEOs from guitar and keyboard manufacturers citing booming sales. And music site Reverb says prices for used gear, especially the kinds good for beginners, are up as well. As for my own musical journey, it's been slow and sometimes inconsistent. But I've been able to have phone recitals for older relatives when I learn a new song. They are very forgiving of my errors, and I'm hoping to improve in the new year. Your moment of economic context on this Wednesday. You know how all the dictionary sites like to do the word of the year? Well, Investopedia, a site with research on economic and financial topics, has its own list of popular terms of 2020. Words like forbearance for mortgage relief and market terms like stock split. Hello, Tesla. The number one phrase on the list? Stimulus check. Our media production team includes Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebel, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Tolliday, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.